supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Emily is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Adolescent impulsive behaviors, or small children who seem out of control. What about teenagers experimenting with drugs or withdrawing from friends and family? Defiant children, fearful children, underachievers, overachievers. What's a parent to do? Well, according to my guest, we can start by understanding how our child's brain functions, and then begin to turn these challenges into opportunities, not just for emotional growth, but for brain development. At the heart of this is something called integration, which is talked about at length in the new book, The Whole Brain Child, by pioneering neuropsychiatrist Dan Siegel. Dan's a clinical professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine. He's also the executive director of the MindSight Institute, and he joins us by phone. Dan, welcome back, and congratulations on the new book.
Thank you very much, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, of course, we'll be taking lots of calls from you, I'm sure, over the course of the hour. Give us a call at 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We're going to be talking about our children's developing minds. Dan, so let's begin at the beginning. Your basic messages is that we have four parts of our brain, left and right, and what you refer to as upstairs and downstairs. So give us a brief overview.
Right. Well, that's exactly right, Dan. The idea is that if parents know the basics about the brain and how the brain of their child develops from birth onward, then it gives them really a chance to see some of the challenging moments in parenting as actually opportunities to turn them into moments of growth and moments of development. So that in the brain, as you're pointing out, you have different parts of it. You have a left side and a right side. You have a higher side, what we call the upstairs brain, and a downstairs brain, so to speak, which have different components, of course. For a brain scientist, we use different names, but for us as parents, these are useful terms. And so when parents know how these different parts work, they actually can see how to link them together. And when kids have linked brains, what we call integrated brains, they actually have more resilience, they're more compassionate, and they have more self-understanding. So in all these ways, integration actually can be the key that a parent provides for their child as they grow.
So let's start with the overarching idea. In your book, you've got lots of wonderful sketches in your book. So one of them, you have the right brain as the artist while the left brain is playing Scrabble.
Yes, this relates to the findings that are filled with research that back it up. But basically, it's that the right side is more in tune with when we see things as a whole. When we, for example, you go to a museum and you see a painting, your right side of your brain takes that in as a whole, so you get patterns like that. So there's a wonderful book called, for example, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain that I've done myself and I have lots of people I work with do, and it just gives you the experience of what it's like to see things all at once in a visual kind of way, and the right side specializes in that. In contrast, the left is, fortunately, with a bunch of L words, like it's linear rather than holistic, and it's linguistic, meaning it's the words we use, like what I'm saying to you right now, Dan. You know, these are really important ways we communicate information, but they're different from having a painting, for example, in front of us. So those words would be what you would because they're separate, sometimes we can overemphasize one versus the other, and the idea is to develop both of them and then to have them work collaboratively together. And so Tina Bryson and I, my co-author, we wanted to put really accessible stories and, as you're pointing out, drawings, so that a busy parent could actually learn this very quickly, see how to apply it in very practical ways, and it would be even fun to do.
Well, we're going to get to some of those practical ways as we continue with the show. But, you know, when you talk about this left brain, right brain phenomenon, you know, it just reminds me of couples I see in my office and the men being accused of living in their right brain. They're, you know, the women want to talk about emotions and process and the big picture, and the men want to, you know, use their linear brain to solve problems. And, you know, as this develops, Dan, as we continue talking, we can see the origins in very, very young children. Hey, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking with Dan Siegel. He's a neuropsychiatrist, and he's written The Whole Brain Child. And we're talking about integrating all components of a child's brain to help them become more resilient and more compassionate, as Dan says. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you'd like to give us a call and tell us about some of the ways your children behave, and maybe Dan will be able to weigh in and talk about what parts of the brain that's coming from and how it can best be integrated. So, Dan, let's go back to these components of the brain. So we talked about left brain, right brain.
Yes.
Let's talk about upstairs and downstairs, more of a thoughtful brain versus an instinctive brain. Is that a fair way to differentiate?
Absolutely. That's a great way to start, Dan. And, you know, when you and I are speaking now and we're thinking about what we're going to say and planning that, all of that kind of what's called executive function or organizing how we focus our attention, how we carry out our thinking and even our behaviors, those are the upstairs brain at work. And so we as mammals have had this area called the cortex, the higher outer bark of the brain, for, you know, hundreds of millions of years, and in primates it became more evolved, and in human beings even more extensive and elaborated. So we can have a radio program, and you can connect with people all over the world. You and I can connect with each other across the planet because our human cortex, this upstairs brain, thought about what the world was like, studied it with science, used engineering to make these practical tools. Someone invented this incredible way we could communicate. And now, as a human family, we can communicate all around the planet because of the upstairs brain. For a parent, you really want your child's upstairs brain, which develops largely because of the experiences we offer kids at home and then at school. You want that part of the brain to be respected, but we need to realize that all of us, each human being, is actually building that upstairs brain on a foundation that comes from below. And this is the downstairs brain, Tina and I call it, but, you know, it's the what's called the brainstem, the old reptilian brain, and a limbic area, which is basically the old mammalian brain. So we've just helped parents not worry about those fancy terms and just call it the downstairs brain. And that is instinctual, as you're pointing out, and it's very connected to the body. So it helps regulate the body, and let's say you're nervous and or scared and your heart is pounding. The first part of your brain in the skull that will register that is actually the downstairs brain. And so sometimes, as an example, if a child is frightened, the downstairs brain may be getting very, very aroused, very agitated, very increased in its activity. And a child who's trying to just cope and deal with things may use their upstairs brain to try to focus on what's going on in the world and not be aware of actually how they're feeling. So a feeling that comes from the body is mixed with these experiences of, for example, fighting back or fleeing that come with fear in the downstairs brain. And sometimes those activities can go on and a child has no awareness of them. So integration in this case would involve a parent tuning in to what's going on in the downstairs part, allowing the child to use their thoughts and understanding from the upstairs part and bring them together, not to ignore what's going on, but to bring them together.
Give us an example, Dan.
Well, let's say someone's really, really upset about going swimming, and you notice that while they're getting ready for their swimming lesson, they're really fidgeting a lot, they're looking frightened, they're going around their room just picking up different things, and they're not getting ready. Now, a parent can get very agitated with a child, frustrated, saying, we need to get there, we have to be there on time. But they'd be ignoring the reality that this child's downstairs brain is filled with fear for whatever reason. So you would want to pause there and say to the child, look, I know we're trying to get ready, but you seem to be feeling something that isn't helping you get ready to go to swim class. Let's take a moment and actually look at what your downstairs brain is doing. And a child may, be shaking in their hands. They may feel their heart rate pounding, and they may tell you about it. And so you can use the upstairs brain to pause, reflect on what's going on below, and not try to change it or ignore it, but just see what is going on there.
Because, all right. Let me be that child.
Yes.
For a minute. Now, I'm going to give you a hard time because I'm not that easy a kid.
Okay.
All right. So,
go for it, Dan.
All right. So I'm fidgeting, I'm procrastinating and delaying, something I know very well.
Thank you.
And you come in and ask me if I'm feeling something.
Hey, Danny, we have to get to class. What's going on?
I just can't find my socks.
Yeah, there's socks I see right on your shelf. But, let's take a minute before we get off to the class and tell me, what are you feeling in your body right now, Danny?
I'm just tired and I'm not so sure I want to go. And not only that, they're not the socks I want to wear anyway.
Yeah. Well, I know you sound like you don't want to go to class. And I'm just wondering if your body is trying to tell you something, if your downstairs brain is sending you some kind of message that we ought to listen, meaning me, your dad, and your upstairs brain. If you could let your downstairs brain give you a message with words, what would it be saying to you right now, Danny?
It depends on how old I am.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
But how old do you want to be?
I want to be about 7.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. I just don't want to go. I don't know, Dad.
Well, now what? Notice what your arms are doing. What do they feel like? They feel heavy. Do they feel light? Are they shaky?
Yeah,
they're
tense, and I want to hit something.
Okay. All right. Well, here's a pillow. So try hitting it and see if you can let your downstairs brain send you a message, like an image or something that it might be just trying to communicate to you about what it's feeling right now.
I'm angry.
You're angry.
Okay, yeah.
So hit this pillow. Tell me about the anger. Let the downstairs brain really talk to us.
I don't want to do all this stuff my parents are making me do.
You don't want to do like the swimming lesson?
No.
Yeah. So give me some real hits on this pillow and tell me what's going on in your downstairs brain. You're feeling overwhelmed? You feel scared? You feel just...
I don't feel scared. I feel mad. It's just too much. I want to play video games. I don't want to do all this.
Okay.
Crap.
Well, listen, I hear what your downstairs brain is saying, and here's what I think we need to do, because we have this plan to go on the swimming class. We're going to do some video games when we get back, and I'm going to do one with you. Right now, we've got to go to class because the teacher's waiting for us, and then what you and I are going to do is we're going to sit down and look at your whole schedule during the week and figure out how your downstairs brain can tell us what it needs, how your upstairs brain can actually work on making a plan, and together I think we'll be able to make something work.
Okay.
How's that sound?
All right. Well, all right. Now, let's come back. I'll be the interviewer again. And by the way, Jennifer, I want to tell our producer, give Siegel a couple extra bucks for this. I gave him a hard time. So what just happened? What happened to the brain of that little Danny? What were you doing?
So what I was doing there was first connecting with the upstairs brain to say, look, you know, you and I can work together with a thoughtful way. So I'm saying, let's talk about what the communication is happening. So that's the first step of what's called differentiation, or realizing that there's differences between these different areas. So instead of just saying to the child, get going, you know, we're late, you have to go, you pause, even if it's going to take just 30 seconds, you'd be amazed how effective this is, that you say, okay, look, I can reason with the upstairs brain, but what I'm asking for from the downstairs brain is not reasoning, it's just feeling and impulses, and I take out the pillow, not because the upstairs brain wants to hit a pillow, because the downstairs brain needs to do that. You know, it's literally about 300 million years old. It communicates with behaviors. And so the wonderful thing about this approach is that if you honor differences, upstairs different from downstairs, and then allow each of the ways these different parts of the brain work to come out, then kids actually really feel seen. They begin to feel safe, and in this move, you know, I can make a plan, okay, I understand you want to just shoot things in a video game, that's fine, we're going to do that together when we get back, but right now together, because I honored your downstairs brain, I'm going to get both your brains, upstairs and downstairs, to get what you need to go in the pool.
Well, the other thing that you did that I really liked is, I didn't feel a gun to my head. You said there's something going on with you. Let's just sit down. We're not going to worry about the clock. We're not going to worry about swimming. Let's just sit down. And that felt very important to me, that I became important, my emotions.
You know, Dan, that is such an important point you're underlining, because parenting is really all about just what you so beautifully said. It's really about allowing a child to be themselves, parent to see that, honor that, but then, you know, they need structure.
Right.
You needed to go to your lesson, which you had a commitment to. I need to teach you to honor commitments, but I also need to see who you are.
Yeah.
And this allows you to do both as a parent.
Yeah, you know, we psychologists talk about how critical it is for children to be able to feel felt.
Yes.
And that's the big deal. We've got to take a short break, Dan. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the amygdala, where all the emotions are, and why so many children and adults seem to have this powerful amygdala, and the upstairs doesn't seem completely furnished.
Right.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. We are talking about children's developing brains with Dr. Dan Siegel. He's a neuropsychiatrist who's written The Whole Brain Child, 12 Revolutionary Strategies to Nurture Your Child's Developing Mind. And we're going to take calls after this break. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. 9499. If you've got any questions or comments about your children and their behavior and what can be done to help integrate that better into their lives, give us a call. 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Drexel University Online supports WHYY and offers over 100 online degrees for those thinking about sharpening work skills or advancing their career. With a focus on practical learning and faculty committed to excellence in education, Drexel offers an online doctorate degree of nursing practice, as well as master's and postmaster's degrees in clinical trials, nursing leadership, and mental health. To learn more about earning a master's, bachelor's, or a certificate, it's Drexel.com. To request more information, Drexel.com.
Hello, I'm Christine Dempsey.
And I'm Ed Cunningham.
You may remember us from such pledge drives as winter 2009.
Or summer 2008. We really enjoy talking to you.
But we understand that you may not enjoy hearing from us.
That's why for fall 2011, we'd like to suggest you try YStream.
YStream, it's the programming you tune in for without the membership breaks.
You have until October 12th to pledge and take advantage of YStream.
For details, go to whyy.org/YStream.
We are back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about your child's developing brain with Dr. Dan Siegel, clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA School of Medicine and executive director of the MindSight Institute, which is his previous book, or perhaps two books ago, and it was really a seminal piece of work, such an important book, MindSight. So, Dan, let's go to the phones. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We'll start with Candace. Hi, Candace. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a son who is 16 years old, and he has been diagnosed with different learning disabilities, but, like, there's nothing that ever, anything ever concrete. So he didn't get a lot of help in school because they were able to say, you know, more or less, you know, he was one of those kids that were borderline. They behaved, they blamed a lot of things on behavior. But I was able to get him a special school because, you know, he did not learn to read in the whole word process as they were teaching them. And I did get him in a special school that really did, help him with that. But it's just that special school label has never left him. He just feels stupid, okay? He's never been found his niche, in other words. And you know, when I'm listening to the doctor, I was like that. Like, he would always pick something he wanted to do, and I was always supportive. But then when he wasn't, like, the star or become successful at it right away, then he didn't want to do it. And I remember screaming at him, you know, about get those skates on, you know, when I would put him in ice hockey or whatever it was.
How old is
he? Now he just feels like mediocre. He doesn't have a place in life, and
well,
I see anger, lots of anger.
How old is he, Candace?
He's 16.
All right. Well, let's hear what Dan Siegel has to say. And you know, Dan, I want to address this overarching issue that so many humans I know feel, and that's not feeling good about ourselves, not feeling good enough. Where does that live in the brain, and how does that get remediated?
Right. Well, Candace, thank you so much for your question. And, you know, it sounds like your son is very fortunate to have a mom who's his advocate and recognized he needed some help in school. So that's really terrific. You know, I think, Dan, you're really right when you say a lot of people don't feel good about themselves, and it is a kind of epidemic, at least in our country,
yeah,
that is really a great concern. So let's just begin with the specifics of, Candace, what you're asking about. You know, it is true that kids with learning differences in a school setting who don't feel like they are meeting their teacher's expectations do start to feel badly about themselves. And so putting them in a school setting where they can master the material, where teachers should be trained in how to give them a sense of positive self-worth and self-esteem, those are really important steps. I also find, in addition to that, that teaching a child about the brain allows them to learn, okay, I may have a brain that's different from the typical child in school, but difference doesn't mean less than. And this is a hard thing to convince a child when they haven't been performing on the test. So as you go through this, it's important to not only teach them that, okay, their brain's a little different, but to find their passion, to find what they love, and to find a way to give them a sense of mastery of something. So,
Dan, what would you tell Candace's son about his brain?
Well, I'd want to know specifically what his challenges were, and from what Candace said, there were issues about reading. So I would go over, I would literally draw a picture of the brain. I would tell her son that, you know, reading is actually a very, very recent development in our history as a human family, so I'd want to make this generalized, and that there are actually a lot of people who can speak with spoken word, but their brains haven't naturally come to the ability to decode written words down into language, and that that is actually a very unusual skill for our species to have, in the sense that it wasn't natural in our evolution. So I point that out, and I say, look, you know, you may have differences in that, and we're going to support you in learning to take those squiggles and turn them into sounds in your head, and, you know, just the fact that that's challenging for you doesn't mean what a lot of kids call themselves is, I'm stupid or I'm dumb. So whatever word they would be saying, I would say doesn't mean you're that. It's not, you are not dumb. It means you have a difference. And then once I did that, I would want to say, you know, look at what you can do. And here's where, you know, being being able to master something, let's say even like, well, you mentioned skating, Candace, well, or if it was something like drawing or being kind to your animal, pet, or, you know, whatever the strength and passion is, you really do want to find something where your child feels like, not so much that they can be the greatest in the world at that, but where they have something they love and something not only they can enjoy doing, but where it gets better and better as time goes on.
See,
you want to find something like that. That is important.
I wonder what would be the value of sitting down with a child like this and also talking about the left brain and the right brain and what happens in different sides of his brain and, you know, which side might be weaker, which side might be stronger, what happens in each side.
If you could know that from the testing and from what he shows, I think that would be a great idea. You know, it's interesting, but in kids with reading issues, it can be either side, and it depends on what is actually found. So you're absolutely right, Dan. If you knew there was a not so strong a right or a left, it could be either one, you could definitely point that out. And again, finding the strength, building up the areas that are not so strong, finding strength. And here's the secret. I mean, and this is, I think, why people feel so badly about themselves. We live in a really complicated world, and sometimes we're all so busy that we don't realize that kids really need to be joined, like, let's say, seen for what they love, like, let's say, a kid comes to you with a bug. You know, a parent who goes to their child who's showing them a bug and says, get that stupid bug out of here, I hate bugs. That child had a passion for the insect.
Yeah.
That as a parent, if you miss that opportunity, the child will actually feel badly about himself. If a parent says, hey, you know, I don't really like bugs, but hey, my child's interested in a bug, I know if I tune into their interest, they're going to actually feel positively about themselves. So you go, wow, look at the green eyes on that bug, and those wings are so big. And the child goes, yeah, and look how the tail's flicking back and forth. And you go, oh, my God, that's so amazing.
Well,
that child would feel good about himself or herself because you've been interested in what she's interested in.
Well, and one of the things I like about what you're saying, by the way, Candace, thanks so much for your call. One of the things I like about what you're saying is the whole issue of passion. You know, I view it through the lens of a psychotherapist, and in my office, over and over and over again, I'm seeing adults who lost their passion or certainly misplaced it for a few decades. And, you know, we don't want to do that to our kids. We want to honor passion.
That's right.
You know, and,
right.
and not wipe it out. We're going to go back to the phones in a second. I want to reintroduce you. Our guest is neuropsychiatrist Dan Siegel. We're discussing his new book, The Whole Brain Child, and it really is about integrating a child's brain much, much more than managing their behavior. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Give us a call. If you want to talk about your children and your child's behavior, I'm interested in hearing about your children of all ages, from infancy through middle age. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Barbara on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Yes. Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm calling. I have four children, and partially they were educated in a private school and partially in a public school. And according to the study and according to the book, can you tell us where is today's society going with the public school education going toward math and English and getting rid of the art and music?
Well, Barbara, these are terrific questions. I can tell you, I just had my son, who's an education major at college, here all weekend, so we've been talking about just this topic. And it's a huge one. And I can tell you that this question of where not only public schools, but even private schools, which are feeling so pressured to meet the testing score strategies of having their children achieve that way. You know, I talk about something called reflection, which is the ability of teaching a child to know what their inner life is like. And one of the ways you do that is through art. And you do it through music, and you do it through physical expression, like dance. You can also see people being in touch with their inner life through athletics. And these physical things, dance and physical education, are being taken away from public schools. Art and music are seen as like add-ons that can be easily removed when funding gets difficult. And the sad thing is, those activities actually develop the exact part of the child's brain that they need to go out into this much more complicated world they're going to face than people did 50 years ago.
You know, Dan, some research shows now that our children are coming out of school with more factual knowledge in their heads, but they have less skill at problem solving and they're less resilient.
Exactly. This reflection is the basis of resilience, and it's really sad that schools, which are under a lot of pressure, they're stressed, the faculty and the administrators are very stressed to deal with what they're dealing with. I think there needs to be a whole different approach, and in the different writings I do about education, I talk about a new three R's, which is the reflection that I'm talking about, relationships, and those two R's build resilience, as Dan is talking about. So reflection, relationships, and resilience, instead of just reading, writing, and reading.
That's well said. Barbara, thanks so much for your call. Let's see if we can get another call on before we have to take another break. We've got Juliet on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Juliet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very bright 6-year-old child. He's 6 and a half, and he's in first grade. And he's always been very, very smart, but he's also had a very highly emotional side, and he can be intense in his reactions to his environment. So as a parent, I try to keep stimulation as low as possible so that he had plenty of downtime and that he's been, you know, we don't have technology in the house, nothing like that. He uses Play-Doh a lot and all of that. But still, I find that I want to give him the tools to be able to sort of see when he's feeling, you know, overwhelmed and understanding what those feelings are and being able to verbalize it to his teacher, for example, so that he can kind of cope on his own a little better.
Well, Juliet, I know Dan Siegel's going to say this. I just want to jump the gun. Your son is one lucky kid to have a mother like you that is so thoughtful and attentive to his brain and the way he operates. He's one lucky kid. So, Dan, let's turn to you. And is this an upstairs brain, downstairs brain, what's happening with Juliet's son?
Yeah, I think it can be a combination of that and also a left-right issue.
So let's understand what's going on here with the
Yeah, bed. And I want to just say I agree, Juliet, with what Dan is saying. Your son is very fortunate to have you as a mom. And this book actually has so many tools that you can can actually sit down and go over with your son, because what Tina Bryson and I did was we put in actual sections of the book that are for you to read with your child. And there are a couple of exercises for your son in particular that I think are going to be beautiful, and I would love for you to email me after you try them out and let me know how it goes. In particular, I think your son will really benefit, even at six, with understanding how his emotions and thinking relate to, as Dan's pointing out, the upstairs brain and the downstairs brain, meaning that sometimes you get really big feelings from the downstairs part of your body, which includes your heart and your lungs and your gut feelings, and they come up and they start affecting in a big way just the emotions you feel in this wash of, like a tidal wave of sensations. Now, that can come up to your thinking brain, which is the upstairs brain, and it can just flood it so that you can't think clearly anymore. And then what happens is, instead of having the skills to learn how to make those work together, the downstairs flood and the upstairs rational thinking, people just start a kind of internal battle where they get really nervous that at some point their inner feelings are going to flood them, or, as you're doing, you know, you want the environment to be so protected that it'll keep this from happening. So everyone's like walking on pins and needles. What we do is we actually offer a different kind of strategy, which is to teach a child this thing called the wheel of awareness, which is one of the strategies, I'd love to hear how it goes with your son, where you can actually practice this ability to know that the way the wheel works is you have an outer rim, which represents everything you can be aware of, like a feeling, for example, and then an inner hub of the wheel, which is this clarity of awareness. And when kids practice this, they learn that when a feeling comes up, even though it may feel like it's taking them over, they learn that they can sit within this stability of the hub, and the feeling will, like a wave, come in and then go out. And then when they learn that and practice it, in a really short amount of time, they begin to see that their feelings are not their enemies. They're just one of the things that arises, and if it's particularly strong, okay, but now you're going to give him the tools so that he can befriend his own emotional mind.
You're talking about mindfulness and mindful meditation without meditating, per se.
No. Well, it is true that you could call this a mindfulness approach for sure. It's actually an integration of consciousness technique that I use in the MindSight approach that you mentioned earlier,
yes.
Dan. And it can be used not only at home with kids, but there are even schools that are starting to use the wheel of awareness as a regular practice because it strengthens that reflective ability. It actually builds the circuits right behind the forehead that allow you to calm your emotions. And you wanted to talk about the amygdala, Dan?
Yes.
That's
yeah.
One of the downstairs parts that's probably very active in Juliet's son.
Right.
And you want to increase literally the fibers that allow this prefrontal area behind the forehead in the upstairs brain to actually calm the storm of the downstairs amygdala.
So what we have to learn to do, regardless of age, is when we have these big emotions, just sit with them for even a brief period of time. Yes?
Absolutely. Well, I'm sitting with it, Dan. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Let's squeeze on one more phone call before we go to break. We've got Gene on the line. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Dan. We have twin boys, and they turn 3 next month, and they're in very different places. The one boy is developmentally delayed, and he receives early intervention, PTOT and speech, once a week, and they recommended that we do that twice a week. So I take him also on Saturday mornings for sessions. And his brother is entirely in the other direction. And my question relates to projecting into the future a bit, where we could easily see one boy being in the 8th grade and one boy being in the 7th grade, and the peer pressure, knowing that they're twins, and we've been supporting them and trying to raise them as individuals, but I'm wondering about the impact on the boys in that kind of scenario, especially on the boy who's delayed.
Right. Well, Gene, first, you know, I want to just really say that your sensitivity to the impact of you know, what may happen to one of them, especially when living with the other, you know, is going to be really the most important step, that you just remain aware of that and tuned into what that's going to mean for them. You know, we see this a lot, you know, in working with, even if they're not twins, but just with kids who have different needs than their siblings, and, you know, how they find a sense of feeling good about themselves, like the earlier caller Candace mentioned. So what I would say is this. First of all, the idea of doing early intervention is fantastic, and you actually don't know, because the brain at three is growing so much, we actually don't know where he's going to be when it comes time to start school in 2 years. So I would keep an open mind about that and just say, you know, let's just see how it goes. In the big picture, just to get you looking even further ahead, you know, how your child finds a passion and a sense of mastery about something will be the key. And I have seen so many kids with challenges developmentally who actually don't only grow strong in spite of them, they actually grow strong because of them. And you never know what's going to be a gift to the child's individual sense of mastery and accomplishment and sensitivity, and also what may end up being a gift to the world. So I would take a deep breath and say, look, you know, this has come about, and this is what you're facing. And there's a beautiful poem about by a poet named Rumi who talks about the guest house, and that you don't know the different sufferings that come into our life, how they're going to actually turn into deep gifts. So I would just keep that in your heart as you go through this, because otherwise I can feel in your voice that, you know, there's a sense of heaviness about it. But actually, you never know, and I'm not trying to just be optimistic here. I've seen this so many times that the child you think is going to have the most problems because they're facing the most challenges actually ends up having the deepest understanding and gifts, and then they get older, they're really ready to approach the world with this incredible resilience and strength and sensitivity. So that's where you need to be.
And
even if they end up in different grades, this is what I want to say. If that happens to be what happens, you need to be really open with your son about saying, look, everyone's different, and in terms of the timing of your development, this is where the timing brought you at, so you weren't ready for first grade or kindergarten when your brother was. But timing is not intelligence, and timing is not ultimate ways you end up. And so I would tune into that, the timing of when things happen, because everybody grows at a different rate.
Yeah, Gene, I do hope this was helpful for you, and I appreciate your call, and I wish you and both of those boys all the luck and happiness in the world. Dan, we've got to take another break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about gender differences and brains, and I want to talk about whether empathy, whether compassion can be taught. It's something that I've wondered about for years now. We're talking with Dan Siegel. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA School of Medicine. He's the executive director of the MindSight Institute. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
Academic Urology is pleased to support WHYY. Providing integrated urologic care throughout the Philadelphia region, Academic Urology brings together 36 urologists at 16 office locations. More information at academicurology.com.
Supporting WHYY, Graduate Studies in the Arts and Sciences at St. Joseph's University, offering flexible master's and certificate programs such as organization development and leadership, health, writing studies, and education, including a new doctorate focused on higher ed. Programs are full-time, part-time, on-campus, or online. To register for the 5 p.m. open house on Tuesday, October 18th, sju.edu/higher knowledge. Graduate Studies at St. Joseph's University. Higher knowledge, higher potential.
William Penn Charter School supports WHYY. A friend school for boys and girls pre-K to 12, Penn Charter opens its doors to the community for an open house Saturday, October 15th at 2 p.m. Details and educational philosophy are at penncharter.com.
And we're back. on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with neuropsychiatrist Dan Siegel, who's written The Whole Brain Child. So, Dan, I wanted to talk to you about gender and its impact on the brain. Is it a valuable distinction? I mean, early on I talked about, you know, couples in my office, and, you know, he always gets accused of living in his left brain, you know, trying to fix problems while she wants to talk about them.
Yeah, you know, I know there's a lot written in the popular press lately about the differences between the genders. And, you know, my attitude toward it is this. I'm an attachment researcher, meaning I study the emotional relationships between children and their parents, and we don't find any gender biases about the kind of attachment a child will develop with a parent, a male parent or a female parent, or if it's a female child or a male child. And that really alerted me to the notion that, in fact, there's a great deal of overlap, even in the brain studies, between males and females. Now, I also help run a research center where we study culture and its impact on brain development. And at our center, what we're finding, in fact, is that people's expectations that are embedded in the microculture of families or even the larger culture of our society, they really do affect how the brain grows. So having a son and daughter at home myself, what I've noticed is that if we actually treat them as individuals and don't bring them with expectations of this is what a boy's supposed to be or a girl's supposed to be, I actually think kids can become freer to become truly themselves. So I de-emphasize the innate neurological differences between males and females, because I think when people actually say, oh, a boy is supposed to be this way, it actually will kind of make him that way, and that's not so good for anyone.
Right.
So I actually don't find those distinctions that helpful. And even in working with couples, I try to really drop my expectations. Now, it is true that in our culture, men are supposed to fix problems and women are supposed to talk, and so you see this kind of bias. But that doesn't mean that that's the way it is innately, because we all grow up in our culture. And I find if I really know that males are perfectly capable of being in touch with their feelings and even expressing them, they will actually rise.
Yeah, that's been my experience in my office also. Listen, I do want to talk about an area that's really important to me, and that's empathy. So can it be taught, and what is it?
You know, let's start with the research. Empathy has eight different definitions. So, you know, as scientists, we always come up with different ways of describing things. But in the gist of it is the ability to understand another person's inner subjective life, which means putting yourself in the mental shoes of someone else, putting yourself in their perspective. That's one view of empathy. Another that's related is knowing what another person feels. That's emotional empathy. And those are very related, I think. And so that's the first statement. What is empathy? The second, can it be taught? Research shows that people have different degrees of empathy just as a trait. So some people are more empathic than others. But the research is very clear. It can be enhanced. And also, if you're too empathic, you know, you feel too much from other people, you can down-regulate. You can actually lower it down a little bit so you're more functional. So you can go either way. You can make the optimal amounts of empathy available to you. And one of the studies I'll just point to is a study of physicians. You know, as physicians go through training, they get less and less and less empathic. That's been shown over and over again. If you teach them what you mentioned earlier, Dan, mindfulness practice, to be mindfully aware, to be having the skills to be with their inner feelings and not be swept up by them or overthrown by them, those physicians maintain their empathy and even increase their empathy. And what that does, other research has shown, is it makes the clinical encounter better. So if you're empathic as a physician, you have someone coming to you with a common cold, they'll get over their common cold a day sooner, and their immune function, your patient's immune function, will be better if you have empathy.
We don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to take this issue now and come back to children. And I see too many parents saying to their children who are upset because of what Johnny did to them, telling their child, well, you have to understand Johnny's feelings, which is telling them to ignore their own feelings. That's not a way to build empathy. So
that's right. You want to, because there is something called self-compassion, and you always want to start with a child understanding their inner life, because actually when you look at the brain circuits of empathy, of understanding another person, it always begins with actually being open to your own inner life. And that's what we can teach our kids as a starting place.
Which is kind of what you were doing with little Danny.
Absolutely, and I hope that helped, Danny.
I do feel a little bit better. What's for dinner, Dad?
You know, anything you want, buddy. Let's go. Mom's away.
Hey, listen, speaking of what's for dinner, I have to say to you and to our audience, when you were on the show last year, we became fast friends and kind of kindred spirits. And a couple of times we tried to get together socially and we weren't successful. I'm thrilled to find out today, and I'm telling our audience, you're going to be here in November. You're going to be doing something with the Renfrew Center, and I'm sure all that information is on your webpage. And you and I will certainly have dinner then.
Wonderful.
All right,
well,
Dan.
Just in a couple of weeks, Dan, so I really look
forward
to it.
That's great. Yeah, me too. Take care of yourself.
Thanks so much, Dan. You too, and I'll see you very soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
We've been talking with Dr. Dan Siegel. His new book is called The Whole Brain Child, 12 Revolutionary Strategies to Nurture Your Child's Developing Mind. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to talk about just what Dan and I were talking about, self-compassion. We're going to re-air our show with Kristen Neff. Well, if you've got a question, show idea, or comment, we would love to hear from you. Email us at voices@whyy.org. And you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. And you can listen to archived editions of our shows either on my website or on Voices' website. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Our intern is Elizabeth Haas. Mike and Scott is our executive producer, and she answered the phones today. Thanks, Mike. And Jennifer Lynn is our producer. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Hey, enjoy your week, my friends.
Tell me more.